We're doing Navi. We're up to the end of the book of Shmuel, what they call Shmuel Aleph. And by Jewish tradition, it's one book of Shmuel. And we had learned how Shaul couldn't figure out what was going to happen in this coming war against the Plishtim. And Shaul gets very, very scared when he looks down at the Philistine camp. So Shaul asks Hashem, and he tries whatever way he can, and he doesn't get an answer. The truth is that the description in the book of Shmuel is that David asked Hashem and Hashem didn't answer him. When we open Chronicles, Divrei Hayamim, it says he didn't ask Hashem. Very different than the description in Shmuel.
Does it say he asked, or it says he did not ask?
The wording of the pasuk is Velo darash b'shem. The wording of the pasuk in Shmuel is Vayishal Shaul b'shem. It doesn't get much more contradictory than that. So, once Shaul succumbed to his temptation to go and ask the Ov, so then it's as though he doesn't ask Hashem. The book of Ezra looks back at Shaul and says he doesn't. That's not called asking Hashem. So that deserves broader discussion. I want to read to you the Psukim in Divrei Hayamim. Let's see if I can find it. So it says like this. Oh, I'm not finding it, but that's what it says. That's what it says. I'm not finding it this minute. But right now I don't see it. Here we go. Here we go. It's at the end of the 9th chapter. It says, it's the 10th chapter, but we'll get back to this. I want to learn these psukim when we get to here. When we get back to here, I'll read just the last psukim. It says Vayamot Shaul. Shaul dies in this war. B'malo ashomal b'shem, because he rebelled, so to speak. He stole. He acted inappropriately towards Hashem. Al devar Hashem asher lo shamar, because he did not keep the commandment Hashem gave him. Hashem had told him that he should not take anything from the loot of Amalek. So that's point number one. V'gam nishol ba'ov lidrosh. And point number two, because he went to the Ov, as we learned last time, he went and asked in the Ov what was yet to come. You're not allowed to ask the Ov. So in the book of Divrei Hayamim, we are told these two reasons. We'll get to that in one second. And Finally, v'lo darash b'shem, and he didn't ask Hashem. V'imiteyu, so Hashem killed him. That's the description we have in Divrei Hayamim. We have three transgressions mentioned here. One that he asked the Ov, and one that he didn't keep the word of the prophet to the annihilate Amalek, and so he lost the kingdom.
Where was that from again?
Divrei Hayamim, the end of what they call the 10th chapter. But we have a Medrash, and this is where we left off last week. The Medrash tells us that when Shmuel appears to Shaul, so Shmuel tells him, if you want to run from the war, you'll live, and your children will live. But if you go to war, so then you will die, and your children will die, but your transgressions will be repented for, and you're with me. You're coming to the world to come. And Shmuel hears that they're going to lose the war tomorrow, at least he and his children. And no one else hears what he heard. So they all ask him, what did you hear? They see he's very scared. And he says, oh, I heard that we're going to win the war. And he doesn't tell anyone, and he goes with his children to war. And where we left off in the beginning of the week was that the angels in heaven said, Ribon Shalom, look at what a tzaddik. And here, now that we have time, we'll go through the full quote of the Medrash. The Medrash says, ordinarily, when a person is invited to a wedding, a person says, I won't take all my kids with me because I don't need an ayin hara. I don't want everyone to look at what a beautiful family I have. So people leave a child home, two children home. They don't show up with everyone. They don't want to show off their family. But here, Shaul knows that his children will die at war. But he knows that it's the will of Hashem that he should go to this war. He takes his children willingly. Ribon Shalom, look at what a tzaddik he is. Ribon Shalom, you can't let him die at this war. Before we move on, years ago, one of my relatives was getting married, and they had this American thing where you walk down an aisle. So they said, we want you to walk down the aisle. So I said, the Medrash says, by Shaul, you're not supposed to do that. It says, you don't go showing the whole family off so that people will look at them and be jealous of you and give you an ayin hara. So I said, have everyone else go. Tell them I'm Israeli. I don't walk down aisles. So wherever I could get away with it, I don't walk down the aisle. If it'll get everyone really upset, so I walk down the aisle too. But coming back to here, the angels in heaven said, Ribon Shel Olam, he shouldn't die. And the Ribon Shel Olam said, well, he asked the Ov and the Yidoni, as we just saw in Divrei Hayamim, that was sufficient reason to die. Right? It said in the end of last week's parasha, in the end of Kedoshim, it says it also in the end of Achrimos, it says, Odrega. והנפש אשר תפנה לאובות ואל הידוני, he who turns to Oven Yidoni, לזנות אחיהם, to go after them inappropriately, ונתתי תפני בנפשי ויחתי אותו מקרב עמו. I will focus on that person, and I will cut him off from the nation. So Hashem promises to kill a person who does that. And at the very end of the parasha, we have a reiteration. If a man or a woman has an Oven Yidoni in their midst, they should be executed. If you have witnesses, they should get stoned. Don't let them get away with it. So, Ov and Yidoni are serious transgressions. It seems they're within the realm of idol worship, and we're still going to discuss what Ov and Yidoni are. But the Medrash says, the Ribon Shel Olam said, I'll get to you guys in 1 minute, the Medrash says, the Ribon Shel Olam said, I'm willing to forgo the end of Parshas Kedoshim, Oven Yidoni. But what about the beginning of Parshas Emor? Hashem said, Emor el Kohanim b'nei Aaron. The Medrash says, Hashem said to the angels, go talk to the Kohanim. What about the children of Aaron who Saul, Shaul had killed based on the Lashon Hara, the children of Aaron in the city of Nov? Hashem says, that I can't forgive him. I can forgive him for deriding my honor, my respect, my commandments. I can't forgive him for that. That's the Medrash. The Medrash puts together Kedoshim and Emor, last week's Parsha. And this week's Parsha says, Hashem answered the angels, Emor el HaKohanim. What are you going to tell the Kohanim who were murdered? The men, women, and children of the city of Nov. And with that it was declared in heaven that Shaul would die at this war. It's fascinating how the Medrash gives us this perspective, which is very different than the perspective in the book of Divrei Hayamim, which is very different than the perspective of the book of Shmuel. Each one is stressing a different point. There's more to be said. We really need to understand the purpose of the book of Divrei Hayamim Chronicles, but that's not our subject right now, so we'll leave that hanging for now, because we really raised a question here. There certainly seems to be a contradiction between the description in Chronicles in Divrei Hayamim and the description in Shmuel. And we encounter this numerous times. The commentary on Divrei Hayamim, which has the heading Rashi, is not really Rashi.
What?
A good proof to that is that he quotes Rashi. That's a good proof he's not Rashi.
Rashi in a different place?
No, it's some commentary that was early enough that they printed it under the title of Rashi, but it's not Rashi, just as Rashi in a few tractates isn't Rashi, and Moed Katan and a few others. But at any rate, he gives us a certain angle of understanding. We're going to leave that hanging for now. Let's... Yes, sir.
Okay, Tzaddik, if that's what decreed in heaven, that the way he can purify himself and is by giving up his life and choosing that, but to do that with your family is odd that that makes you such a tzaddik, especially since you usually have other ways that it's possible to do tshuva, you could say.
Well, the Philistines had gathered for war.
Right.
Here... to flee would be to endanger the people.
But he said to the people, don't worry, we'll be fine.
That's what a general always has to say.
That's true when you have no choice and you feel that there are times that you can do, we're going to celebrate. Right?
They had no choice.
Let's go to Yavna, with a time or whatever. I mean, a different thing.
But they had no choice.
They had no choice.
The alternative was to lose the kingdom to the Philistines.
Right.
They didn't have a choice, and the fact that Shaul stood up to the war was what held the fort. Just like we find, I don't want to compare such a tzaddik with someone else, but Achav also stood the whole day fighting battle, bleeding to death, and thanks to him we have the Jewish people managed. They came out on top. I'm saying, so Shaul did an amazing thing here. Yeah, we'll get to that, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, Benny.
What's so bad about Ov?
We'll get to that. We can have a class on that. What is Ov and Yid-Oni? Okay, but maybe we should do a separate class on Ov and Yid-Oni later, if that's okay. That way we could focus on, and I'm saying, it is Thursday night, so let's... Remind me, Bezat Hashem, later tonight we'll get to it. In a nutshell, it's a way of asking the debt. You guys want to take a few minutes to discuss Ov and Yid-Oni right now?
Yeah. It's a death penalty. It's like...
He asked a fortune teller.
Who is Ov?
Something like that, I think.
Again, should we discuss it now or later?
Now.
Okay. Okay, so we begin with the Mishnah in Tractate Sanhedrin. There are different opinions as to what Ov and Yid-Oni are, but let's begin with the Mishnah and work our way from there, okay? Okay. Here we go. I want to begin with maybe we should begin with the Mishnah, and then I want to read the Rambam's commentary, and then we'll go to the Gemara, okay? That way we begin with something that's a little bit concise. The Mishnah is in the 7th chapter of Sanhedrin. The Mishnah says, Ma'al Ov, what is the master of Ov? Zepitom ha-medaber meshechio. That is a type of sorcery where a person hears from his armpit the deceased talking. So Rashi explains that to mean that he raises the dead from the ground and they answer from the armpit. Yideoni, what is Yideoni? Zam daber befiv. The literal reading of the Mishnah is it talks in his mouth. Exactly what is Ov and Yidoni? The Gemara says that they put a certain bone in their mouth. According to one opinion, they put the bone in a skull, and then they'd start hearing the dead talking. The one who does Ov claps his hands vigorously so that you start hearing it. So Ov and Yidoni is some kind of sorcery. That's Ov and Yidoni. says the Rambam. So we saw the Mishnah. Ov is, you hear the dead talking from either directly under the armpit or the earth under the armpit. And Yidoni is, you use a certain bone either in the person's mouth or in a skull's mouth, and you hear it talking. Says the Rambam. Ubalov mefulsam bilshon haMikra, it's famous throughout the text. Min meminim velo itarev lecha b'dorei shel hametim. You should know that it's one of a type, but it's not. Don't get it confused with those who ask the dead. Lefi shedorei shel hametim eino oseh maaseh b'shum panim. A person who asks the dead doesn't do anything active in asking the dead. אבל הוא מין ממיני הבודים בעתידות דברים מליבם, וזה שיצבם וילין בקברים וידבר דברים והוא רואה בחלומות עתידות כפי מחשבתו. A person who wants to ask the dead, so he invents, he fantasizes, he goes to sleep in the graveyard and comes back and says, I had dreams and this is what the dead told me. That's what the Torah says, don't ask the dead. That's Doresh El Ametim. That's something totally different. He's not active. But Ba'al Ov is when a person is active. He does an act. There are those that take the skull of a man, and when the skull has no flesh left on it, they hide it, and then they offer incense in front of it. And then, after he does all kinds of things with the skull, he hears all kinds of things coming out of the skull, and he thinks that now he's hearing the dead talking to him. So that's the action of Ov, where they're taking a skull of someone who died, and they're going to burn things around it, and then they're going to listen, and they're going to listen to that skull and think that the skull tells them things. So Rambam says it's all a lie. The skull doesn't talk, but people imagine that they're hearing things. As many people go into the desert, they go into places where no one else lives, and when they spend enough time alone, they start hearing voices. It has nothing to do with reality, says the Rambam. Ov is a way of getting people to fantasize that the skull said something to them. When I studied magic, So I also studied British magic. And one of the things that science today knows is that much of the magic was done with hallucinogens. They would burn hallucinogenic plants, and when a person breathed in that smoke, so then he could really hear the skull talking to him. Because when people take a hallucinogenic, then they could think their hand is a snake, they could hear their mother talking from the dead, they could really hallucinate a million things because they're under the influence. That, says the Rambam, is an oath. He says it's a farce. There's nothing real going on there. But there's a lot of activity. He says that's why ov can be more punishable than doresh el hametim. Doresh el hametim, says the Rambam, this is based on Rambam's understanding of the Talmud here, doesn't do anything active. He goes to sleep in the graveyard. He's not serving anything up to the dead. The ov is serving sacrifices and burning incense in front of this skull in the belief that this will arouse the spirit and he'll get answers to his questions. Yidoni, so it says he puts a yadua bone in his mouth. Now this is interesting. There is machlokas. What does it mean, a yadua bone? The word yadua could mean something that's known, like yada, known. Yadua, something known. Or the word yadua, says Rambam, is the name of a bird. And others say that yadua comes from the word adnei hasadeh, that yideoni is a bone from a specific type of animal that's almost like a human. An animal that's so close to a human, it's not clear in the Mishnah whether that animal is a human or not. Some want to say it's an orangutan, others want to say it's this mystical creature that has a belly button attached to the ground and it has human features. Adnei hasadeh. So that's what others want to say. You take a bone from that and you put it in the mouth and then it starts talking. So all of this Rambam holds has no validity, none of it is true. And the truth is that the commentaries here, the Radak over here, brings two approaches as to what happened with King Saul. One approach says there are really forces out there, you could tap into them. We will see more on this when we learn the Ramban, Torat Hashem Tumimah, the speech we just began. So he goes that route, and he says there are forces and you could tap into them. That's Ramban. Then you have the approach like Rambam, that it's all nonsense. The Torah told you don't do it because it's nonsense. Don't take the Rambam as a complete logic and Rambam saying that there is nothing out there, it's all false. There are certain things which the Rambam also agrees are true. Meaning it's a mistake to think that the Rambam makes of all idol worship and all these mitzvot of kishuf, all of them is nonsense. It's true that the Rambam wrote over here that Ov and Yidoni, he writes at least about Ov, that it's fake, and it sounds like he holds that about Yidoni as well. It's true that the Rambam writes that Shadim, demons, are really figments of people's imagination. That there are no demons out there dancing and threatening you, but rather people can have psychological issues and then they can see demons. And it has nothing to do with reality. That's true. It is not true to say that there are no forces according to the Rambam. In other places, and if you look in the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos, there are certain things which the Rambam says. He says, for example, if you work hard enough with your imagination, you can see into the future. If you work hard enough at it, you won't get it accurately right, but you can arouse your imagination to a point where you can see things that are going to happen with a certain amount of accuracy. So Rambam does agree that there are ways to tap into some forces.
He's saying anyone can do that, or you have to have Hashem's like Ruach HaKodesh?
No, no, no. Rambam's point is this: these are some of the prohibited acts.
So but why is this so bad?
Wait, let's first understand what and why.
Why
so the Rambam and the Gaonim, who the Rambam's following, they learn that the Torah warned us not to go in foolish ways, because foolish ways can lead a person to very dangerous things. People would burn their children in the name of paganism. You could do a lot of dangerous and foolish things in the name of something that makes no sense. The Torah wanted us to stay away from that. That's the Torah's prohibition of paganism. Hashem said, I gave you Torah, I gave you a system, understand it, work with it. Don't go after things that are nonsensical. And then those Gaonim explain that what happened with Shaul and the woman of the Ov was that the woman understood it was Shaul from the onset. She saw through his disguise. The Radak over here quotes from the Gaonim that these people were ventriloquists. They can make it seem like you thought you heard the voice from the ground. She knew what was worrying Shaul. All of the Jewish people knew we were on we were on the brink of war with the Philistines. Everyone saw the huge Philistine army coming to attack. So she knew what was worrying Shaul. And so she knew when Shaul asks her to raise Shmuel, she knew just what to tell him. But whether she really saw something? No, she didn't see anything. So that is one approach to this whole story. The other approach we will learn in the Ramban Bezrat Hashem, in the speech that we're studying, and that is the approach that Hashem created a world where there are forces that can be tapped into. That's the approach we saw in the Drashot Aran. And when the Torah prohibits paganism, the Torah is prohibiting from us something that works. The Torah is saying you're not allowed to do it, but it's not that it's complete nonsense. Very different from the Rambam's approach. We have two approaches to Ov and Yidoni and much of the pagan practices. Yes, sir.
So if it's not nonsense, the Torah, it's still not allowed, but then why is it like the death penalty?
It would seem that it's an extension of paganism.
Yeah. Just because something works doesn't mean you can do it. I mean,
so paganism also, Iran says, works.
Show stop believing in God. I'm saying show stop believing in God. Is that what the Maskana is?
I don't think he stopped believing in God, even though the wording of the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim is Ma'al Bashem. He was disfaithful to Hashem. Ma'al usually means to steal from Hashem, but it could also mean to be disfaithful to Hashem.
You can worship Baal and Hashem.
Right? It says B'ma'alo Hashem Ma'al Bashem.
And how did they take the skull? So they must have taken the skull of Shmuel.
No, they took a skull. Doesn't say which. In Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, it sounds like for different things you needed different skulls. Meaning you needed the skull of a firstborn, you needed to salt it a certain way, you need to put a certain incantation under its tongue.
And why aren't charms not allowed, like the tooth of the fox? It also seems very...
It's a good question for a Thursday night, right? That's if you want to learn, that deserves a discussion. You want later tonight? We can reopen that. Yeah, if everyone here wants to discuss that. Yeah.